Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast, where Eric Steven and I, Jacob Birch, talk all things Padres.
Yay, it's the Padres podcast.
We were actually acquired for a player to be named later.
We're recording this on the December 30th of 2020, but our 2021 rebrand is going to be, we're going to talk all Padres all the time. And we'll get
what,
into it.
What do you think they acquired for us? Maybe one of the like many, many great food options at Petco?
Oh, man.
Hodads? Are we good enough to get a Hodads at Dodger Stadium?
I was going to say, if they acquired us four Hodads, we're screwed because I wanted to go. One of the benefits would be to actually eat Hodads.
It was only the Petco location. We can still run to the Touché. Gas lamp or OB or something.
Ocean, yeah.
We're a San Diego podcast now. We're going to talk all about that. And a Dodgers rewind. We have one left in the can, so we gotta do it. But we'll be back after this. So we've done this podcast before, the Padres win the offseason podcast, but there's some differences, and we'll talk about a myriad of reasons. Padres, I said it sort of in a joking way, but really won the offseason. I mean, who knows what else will happen? We have more to come, but what two killer trades by the Padres?
Well, so, and like the funny part about all this is the timing of it, because MLB, like the offseason is so slow and like, especially the last couple years has been just uneventful. Like it takes forever for like big signings to happen. And then, you know, last year was like actually a relatively decent offseason. There were some good multi-year deals, but the two years before that, it was like elite deals, and like the entire like middle class has been getting shut out, and middle class of like baseball free agents and stuff. And this year it's been like James McCann signed a 4-year deal and nobody else has gotten like anything, you know, so far. And so, and there were there was a lot of non-tenders. There was a lot of people agreeing to deals on the non-tender date, suggesting like that they took below market perhaps just to like avoid getting non-tendered or whatever. So like, it's a rough market out there. And so when any team like actually does something that's not, hey, we're trying to cut cost, it like immediately vaults you to the, you're actually
both
trying
these
to
trades
win.
Were,
like,
hey, we're trying to cut costs, just not for the Padres.
Well, you're right, exactly. So the Padres did what like actual
good
like winning team should do. Like it, they pounced on other teams being cheap. So the timing of it too, it's crazy. Like both trades were actually announced on Tuesday officially. And then they also signed a shortstop out of Korea that hasn't been announced yet, but that seems like more of a like procedural thing. It'll happen like this week at some point, but like to have it all happen like at the same time, it's like a winter meeting style flurry that like makes it really exciting. Usually it's just, we didn't have winter meetings, but, So the first news that came down, I think Sunday night, was Blake Snell. You may remember him from the Dodgers winning the World Series in October. He absolutely dominated the Dodgers in Game 6. He was very, very good in Game 2 as well. He had struck out, I believe, 9, but he pitched 4 2/3 innings. He was a little wild in that game and got pulled before finishing the 5th. The Rays did win that game, but that was sort of emblematic on how the Rays used him. They were very strict in that they didn't really let him go third time through the order this year. He's been like, you know, used reasonably deeper into games in other years, but like, I think part of this was like a 2020 weird thing where teams approach the season in different ways. So it was heightened, I think, in a way, but like the Rays famously pulled him, having given up his second single of Game 6, and he had dominated the lineup. He struck out the top two hitters twice each, and then he was about to face Mookie Betts at the top of the lineup for the third time, and Kevin Cash said, oh, no, we can't do that, and the Dodgers were trailing 1-0, and within about 3 seconds, they were ahead 2-1. And we've talked about this, too. Like, the problem wasn't necessarily pulling Snell, although, you know, you probably shouldn't have pulled Snell, but it was like the orthodoxy of like, we have to bring in this reliever who also had been struggling mightily. So, like, that was part of the problem, right? Like, but anyway, enough about that. So the fact is, Blake Snell, very good pitcher. He won the 2018 Cy Young, though if you look at it, that season is looking like an outlier in terms of his career performance, but still very, very good to excellent pitcher. And then, like, that's not all. Like, the Padres, like, I think this news broke Monday, although maybe it was Sunday night. I can't remember the timing of this, where, hey, you know, now that the Padres have Snell, they're also talking to the Cubs about Yu Darvish. It's like, what? You just got your starter. What are you doing? So, like, and so they ended up getting Yu Darvish, and the Cubs, like, think back to 2016, when the Cubs won, they were absolutely stocked with, like, young talent plus, like, excellent, like, major league players, right? They were like, oh, this is going to be a dynasty. Like, what a crazy, like, you know, run they're going to have. And, like, they did, you know, they went to the NLCS the next year. They've gone to the playoffs two other years since. They won the division this last year, but, man, what a... it's impossible to say that the 4 years since have been disappointing for the Cubs, but, like, they kind of have. Like, they certainly did not do as well as, like, you might have thought a team like that would do. Part of it, they have their own network now, and they are cutting costs, basically. Like, they're Theo Epstein resigned with a year left on his deal and sort of hinted at this was coming. Like, he jumped ship, you know, because he knew that they weren't, like, this is going to be a down year. And you look back, the Cubs, like, manipulated the service time of Chris Bryant so they can get an extra year out of him. That extra year is 2021. It even got to a grievance with that, how they handled it. They actually won. They went to all that trouble to, like, keep a player for an extra year, and then that year is going to be crappy. Like, you know, they're clearly, like, not going to win. They're talking about, they're being rumored to, like, also be shopping another catcher, Wilson Contreras. They're probably still shopping Chris Bryant even. So, like, who knows? But like,
and the prospects they got from the Padres are all really young. Like, this seems like they're, honestly, what they did when Theo first got to the Cubs was like, no, this is going to be the kind of a long-term thing, and then we'll look at to 2023, 2023 at the earliest. And that's,
Jed Hoyer today, the Cubs GM now, said, or I guess their president, they don't technically have a GM, I don't think, now. Yeah, but anyway, he said today, like, this wasn't financially motivated, which, liar, you're lying. the Darvish had $59 million left on his deal. It was actually $62 million because he was second in the Cy Young, so his last 3 years got a bump. But the Cubs are, like, covering the extra $3 million of that. So, like, this was a salary dump. Before we go into the Padres, back to the Rays for a second. The Rays, you know, bottom three payroll in baseball, excellent team, got to the World Series this year. They won, like, 90-something games last year, too. But, like, imagine how, like, it's not that what the Rays are doing doesn't work, because it, like, they still do very well for their payroll. But imagine if they just spent a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, they declined Charlie Morton's one-year $15 million option. They had Snell for 3 years and $39 million left on his deal. Like, that's a pittance for, like, an actual effective major league starter, especially a very good one. You bring those two guys back, you run it back, right? Like, you're still, like, the class of the American League, probably. So, like, what the hell are you doing, right? Like, and so, I don't know. That's got to be very frustrating. Like, they can say all they want that they have constraints, but, like, it's too much. Like, I hate it. Like, it's bad for baseball when that happens. But the Padres, like, they're looking pretty good. So the Padres have, like, or had the, like, either the first or second like best like collection of like prospects, in addition to their like burgeoning like major league talent. The Rays were either first or second with them on the prospect side, and now with with getting these guys, some guys from the Padres, the Rays are clearly number one. But the fact that the Padres are in a perfect position, excellent major league team, a lot of prospects, and then so they traded all these guys. I was looking at the MLB.com rank. So for Blake Snell, they gave up Luis Patino, who's their number three prospect, the Padres, number 23 overall in MLB. But none of the other prospects they gave up were top 100 guys, and like only one of the guys they gave up were in the Padres' current top 10. Now, you could argue, like, the Padres were so deep that most of these guys are top 10s on most teams, so like that's fine, but none of them were top 100 guys. So
and then in both teams' cases, none of them are like expected to be like it's I was thinking about this. It's interesting. If you had kind of reversed the teams, and if it was the Rays were getting rid of Yu Darvish for that's the trade I could see supporting the Rays behind. They're getting closer to major league ready prospects. They're selling high on Darvish, who was fine prior to that, but has always kind of had kind of this up and down career. Great peripherals, but sometimes had issues in performance. Okay, that's what you're doing. That doesn't seem like what they're doing with Snell. And the prospects the Cubs got back seem like way, way longer term, not prospects that should be not just a competitive team, because, you know, Cubs won the division last year. But like you said, a massive market. Like, this is not how these teams should be behaving. It's really absurd. And moving back to the Padres, they kept so many of their really the guys they've been looking forward to coming up probably this year.
Yeah, I think it was like I can't remember. I think it was Baseball America. I think they kept four of their top six prospects, like, over the course. Like, they were also, remember, the Padres were like, they traded like nine, or they added like nine active roster players at the trade deadline.
Right.
So, like, Mike Clevinger, who, another great pitcher, like, they acquired, he has Tommy John surgery. He's out for 2021. That probably informed why they did a lot of this. But he's also signed for 2022. Like, they gave up one, I believe, top 10 prospect, excuse me, top 10 in that deal. That was a larger deal. After all these trades, trade deadline, and then the Snell and Darvish trades, the Padres still have four players in the MLB.com top 100 prospects right now, including Mackenzie Gore, who's probably like in line to get a rotation spot with the Padres now. So like they're still like they're that's like the perfect storm of like when you strike, you know, like. So, like, we talked about this before, like, you know, back in when A.J. Preller started in San Diego, they tried to win right away. They made big splashes. They got Matt Kemp, Craig Kimbrell, and James Shields. And, like, those didn't work out. That team was not a team, like, ready to win. Like,
exactly.
They were That's not the structurally big sound. That I was this is, like, a, like, good to great team already that are adding, like, excellent players. So, like, it's a perfect time for them. So, like, good for them. Now...
And unlike some of those other players, when like so we talked about like how maybe the maybe Blake Snell isn't a perennial Cy Young winner, but his both Darvish's and his floors are still so high. Even when they're off, they're still other than maybe Yu Darvish in 2017 World Series. Other than that, they tend to be pretty good pitchers, even on kind of off seasons.
Exactly, and then the other thing though, that the one sort of worry spot for them, so they gave up. Zach Davies in the Cubs deal, so like that was like the best, you know, major leaguer they gave up in these deals. So he was part of their rotation and he was pretty good. So imagine like 2022 for them, they're gonna have Darvish, Snell, Clevinger, and then Denelson Lamet. They should have Lamet for 2021, but remember he was also hurt at the end of 2021. Clevinger pitched an inning in the playoffs. Lamet didn't pitch. Lamet, like, he has an elbow injury, but he opted for the PRP avenue. So, like, for now, he's, like, you know, in theory going to be ready come spring training. But that's always like a question mark that, you know, with that, who knows if he's available, he's excellent. Like that's an amazing top three. And they have Chris Paddock as well. And then Mackenzie Gore probably fighting for a spot. But that, so that's a very good rotation with or without Lamet. With Lamet, that's a problem for like everyone else. But like, so that's, I would imagine the fact that Lamet is still like a iffy was probably why they got both Snell and Darvish, you know, like, but man, like imagine if all those guys are healthy, that's a stacked rotation. It's very good. They also signed the infielder, Ha-Seong Kim. I believe he's 25, I want to say. He's a shortstop. They have Fernando Tatis, so he's not going to play shortstop. Probably going to play second base, I would imagine. And then they have Jake Cronenworth, who they're talking about possibly left field. It gets to that point where the Padres are getting to the point where the Dodgers have been for a little bit, where if some players have, like, utility, right, like, you just acquire good players and figure out where to play them, you know, like that they'll worry about that eventually. Like, they're looking pretty good. Like, look at last year, right? So the Padres were, they had the third best record in baseball. The Dodgers and Rays were first. They had the second best run differential, just behind the, or a little ways behind the Dodgers, but just behind the Dodgers. Third in OPS plus, and then eighth in ERA plus. So maybe had a ways to improve there. Snell and Darvish would help. If you look at the current Fangraphs projected WAR for 2021, Dodgers 1, Padres are 2. They're like neck and neck pretty much. So like then this comes back to like, well, the Dodgers have to respond, right? Like the even though like baseball doesn't really work like that, there's not like this finite amount of time. It's like a long off season, and like if you look back, that 1-2 like projected WAR, the Dodgers are currently like Edwin Rios is their third baseman, and like as much as I like Edwin Rios, I don't think they're going to go into a season with Edwin Rios as their third baseman, at least as the first option. So, if they do, like they will have improved the team in some other way. So like Justin Turner's still out there. You know, we've talked about this. It seems like the obvious choice is they're just going to eventually sign Justin Turner, but he's still a free agent for now. The Blue Jays said to have interest. They'll let that play out, I would imagine. So the team also has been linked to DJ LeMahieu. Yeah.
So one thing I want to highlight, so we talked about sort of third base being open, but I think the other thing that the Dodgers need to be thinking about is they are also in line to lose Kike Hernandez, who was kind of their, oh crap, this team has struggled for long stretches at points against left-handed pitchers, Mr. Snell. And if they lose Kike, I don't know if just bringing Justin Turner back is enough. Now, you don't necessarily have to add a player to solve the problem of hitting left-handed pitching. Mookie Betts returning to his normal splits already would do a lot in that department. But it's I talked about how we've done this podcast before. Another podcast we've done probably 10 times is, why can't this team excel against left-handed pitches? Other than, I think, maybe one season, they were never awful against left-handed pitches, but they become kind of a medium, sort of middle-of-the-pack lineup a lot of the time against especially really good left-handed pitchers. So I think that's something the Dodgers need to be cognizant of to address, whether that's through signing or coaching or whatever, sure. But I think it needs to be at the forefront of their mind if they're going to face Snell however many times a year.
Well, so there's a couple things there. Like, one is that 2020 was weird.
Yes.
Like, because it was only 60 games, but also, it was just like, at the beginning of the season, like 4 weeks in or something, the Dodgers' numbers against lefties were atrocious. Like, they were terrible. They ended up being good to great. Like, they were fine, like, against lefties. So, to the point where, in fact, I'm looking this up live as we're doing this. This is riveting. They ended up 8th in WRC+, 113. Not as good as they were against righties, but, like, still well above average. Like, but that said, they absolutely have to get right-handed bat or more. Like,
yeah,
so,
I think it needs to be more than just Turner. I think they need, it doesn't have to be. The Dodgers are obviously so deep and so good. They're going to be an extremely good team without this. But I think especially just, again, Kiki Hernandez had two things. And when we've talked about him in previous offseason podcasts so far, we've kind of looked to him as his defensive utility. But I also think his ability to come off the bat and hit against a left-hander is important and a component that I hope the Dodgers don't lose.
So I agree with you there for a couple reasons. One is that the player like most likely to like internally join the group this year is Gavin Lux, and he's a lefty. That said, like he's been fine against lefty, but again, you're right about needing, perhaps a right-handed bat to balance things. Now, even if Lux is on your roster as of right now, right? Without Turner, the normal like roster structure, given the rules that were supposed to be in place before the 2020 thing like happened weirdly, 26 man rosters and then a limit of 13 pitchers, which means every team's going to carry 13 pitchers. So that means 13 position players. Right now, the Dodgers have like 11 position players. Now, that doesn't include Matt Beatty or Zach McKinstry. But then again, I don't think either one of those are locks to make like opening day rosters. Also, both are left-handed. They absolutely could make a roster, but like add Turner, right? So you get, that's 12, and like that, you're obviously better off that way. But like, I think you're right. Like they could absolutely add Turner or like LeMahieu or whatever, and somebody else. Like it's so like that's where it gets sort of like tricky in sort of building this. It could be, just returning Kike there. We'll see. Who knows what his market's going to be, but like he could probably get more playing time elsewhere, especially if the Dodgers are like going to commit to Lux a little bit and let him go. So I could sort of see like Kike not returning, but like maybe it's someone. But so that's kind of where they're at right now. Now, like the thing, like I saw, I think more than one person, at least, like either in tweets or somewhere, saying after like the Padres moves, like, oh my God, the Dodgers absolutely have to get Trevor Bauer now. It's like, all right, calm down. I don't think that's like they don't have to do anything, right? Like
that's a total for the Dodgers to win the offseason. They need to do this, sure, but yeah. The Dodgers already have really good starting pitching.
Now, I would say, I would not be opposed to them,
no, sure,
getting another starting pitcher, right? Like, and you can, you don't have to start the season with Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin starting,
maybe gives credence to Julio Urias closer,
yeah, or whatever,
whatever.
If it's they would, I think they're still gonna probably add pitching, also, maybe it's via trade. Who knows? So, I don't know.
I wonder how much of that depends on David Price.
Yeah. Well, here, the problem,
not just if he's coming back, but how good they think he'll be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, a couple people have said, if he opts out again, that'll free up things. But the problem is, unless I don't think David Price is going to decide in January.
No.
He's going to have to see the full plan, MLB's plan, that would inform his decision. And by then the rosters are kind of set, for the most part. So I don't think that's a reasonable assumption that you could just count on him not coming back or whatever. If that's how you're going about thinking about it. But yeah, so I think they're counting on him, in terms of actually being in the rotation. They're looking forward to that. We saw the Reds, they've been linked to trading a bunch of guys. So if you go hardcore, and go after Luis Castillo, who has three years of before free agency. That's where like someone like that would cost you like Lux and probably Kaber Ruiz and more, or something like that. So that, and then if you go after Castillo, then you'd also have to also add more offense because you're, you know, to replace Lux and in addition to like Turner, et cetera, et cetera. So like once you commit down a certain path, I think you have to go like, if they sign DJ LeMahieu, you could like, you could assume they're just going to pay the luxury tax this year. So like, it doesn't like restrain them, but like if they sign Turner, they're not necessarily over. So if you think like that the luxury tax is a hindrance, like certain moves, like they'd probably be okay with going over. They might be okay with going over anyway, but like, I don't know. It's just very hard to like say the Dodgers need to respond when they're clearly going to make moves still. Like, just the timing of baseball's offseason is so odd. And like, it is boring. Like, I get it. It's kind of a bummer. To be honest, personally, I'm okay with it. Like a lot of people I've seen, like I miss baseball, or you know, if they're not watching like the Dominican Winter Leagues or Venezuela or something. But like, I don't miss baseball yet. So like, I'm actually okay with the slow pace of the off season right now. So maybe I'm not the best person to answer on all this, but that said, the Dodgers have been busy in some respect. Now you could argue they did acquire two relievers in the last week. Now there's a decent chance neither one of them pitches at all for the Dodgers in 2021. So like that's the weird part of this, but like and it's sort of like, I'll get into why, but like, okay, let's just get to the deal. So the biggest deal was Tommy Canley, former Rockies, White Sox, and most recently Yankees reliever, 2-year contract. Now, 2-year contract because he's going to miss most or all of 2021 because he had Tommy John surgery in August. Mm-hmm. Now, this, when he was healthy, pretty dominant, like decent ERA, better peripherals, his 35% K rate from 2017 to 2019 was 10th. In Major League Baseball, this is a minimum 100 innings. Corey Knebel, another Dodger acquiree this winter, was fourth. And like now Knebel, he is healthy enough to pitch. Now it's a matter of, is he going to be, because he was not very good in 2020. So the theory is, you know, a healthy offseason, probably going to be better in 2021. Whether he's back to his dominant form, who knows. But with Canley, you just have to sort of wait. I joke that if Canley ends up pitching in 2021, we could have a situation where Dave Roberts calls to the bullpen and says, get Canley up or get Canley up. And like, and then there's just chaos down there. Who knows? And both are right-handed. So yeah, I don't know. Like, who knows, but that it's more of a long-term play. It was not a big money deal. It was like $4.75 million over 2 years total. So, but the it counts against the luxury tax just the same for both years. So like, it does affect them somewhat in this year, if that's a restraint, if that's how you're thinking. Now the other move was more of a smaller move. The Dodgers got the Padres traded for Mike Clevinger in August. The Dodgers traded for Garrett Clevinger, but he spells it slightly differently this week. This is a lefty. He's going to turn 27 in April. Now he pitched his only major league game was in September for the Phillies. Now you could argue the fact that Clevinger, who was on the Phillies 40-man roster since last November, that he didn't pitch. Like, he only got into one game for what was one of the worst bullpens in recent history doesn't bode well for him. Like, or you could view that as maybe the Phillies bullpen was so bad because they make bad decisions, like not adding Garrett Clevinger to their bullpen. Who knows? But the Phillies had a 7.09 bullpen ERA, and Clevinger only got into one game for them. He did see a velocity spike in like 2019 and into 2020, where he's like hitting mid to upper 90s now. He was in the lower 90s before that, so that's a positive. He struck out a ton in Double A in 2019. He also had a high walk total, so like that's sort of what you're getting with that. What he adds is that you know, Caleb Ferguson's down. You're not going to really replace him necessarily, but it adds another lefty to the mix. So he's the fourth lefty on the 40-man roster for the bullpen. That's not including Julio Urias, who's probably going to start, but like could eventually obviously be in the bullpen. But Victor Gonzalez, Adam Kolarik, Scott Alexander, all four of those guys have options. So that's it's just really more of a depth move. Now, back to Canely for a second. I do have a trivia question for you. Okay. So Canely, 35% K rate from 17 to 19. That was 10th in Major League Baseball with pitchers with 100 innings. Now, which Dodger pitcher ranked highest on this list? I will tell you it's not in the top 10.
Okay. I will take a stab at that after this break. Which Dodger ranked highest between the years seasons 2017 to 2019 on the K rate?
Yep.
My first guess is Kenley Jansen.
That you're right to do that because it's absolutely him. Now, so he was.
It was a little dicey because we're including two mediocre Kenley years.
No, no, 2017 to 19.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
really it's
yeah.
one.
Okay, one. Kenley yeah. Year.
And so but even that 33.5% K rate, that was 17th.
Okay.
Now, looking at this list, like, you know, Canely 10th, Corey Knebel, current Dodger 4th. Now, Brad Hand, current free agent, was 14th with 34%. He actually, I'm looking here, he kept that up into 2020. He was excellent with the Indians, so... He was 33.7 this last year. So, like, he was a guy the Indians, speaking of, like, in that Cubs-Rays mold of, like, not really competing or, like, you know, doing all you can. Like, they non-tender. They declined his option, and nobody in baseball really they put him on waivers, and nobody claimed him at, a reasonable rate because the baseball is, like, broken right now. So, like, he's still a free agent. Like, he could be someone who would, like, help the pen if you're talking, like, adding for the Dodgers. But, yeah, so that Kenley Jansen, you know, that was the right answer. There's really no other – I was looking on the top 30, there's no other Dodger. So, like
– I want to argue for my case. I think 2018 and 19 count as mediocre Kenley years. I just want to make that clear.
All right, that's fair. Well, he had a
FIP in 18. I brought stats yeah, up to back me up.
Well, but also like that year too, like where they were like he had a really bad stretch, like where they were it was like a problem. Like
yeah,
you
know,
and
like and that's all I meant. You know, yeah. Not bad, just.
Yeah.
the Kenley we've doing a lot of repeat episodes today of yeah, the is exactly. Kenley broken episode. So
yep.
It's the last episode of the year. Assuming this gets out tomorrow, we're recording this on the 30th. We might as well do a sort of a clip show. So
that's true. Good time. Well, I do have a Dodger rewind.
Oh, that's exciting. And speaking of retrospectives,
yes. So this is not a player. It's not even a Dodger coach or manager or technically someone who was employed by the team, but it is a longtime beat writer, Ken Gernick. MLB.com, a number of reporters, I think six in all that I saw, like long-term, like veteran reporters, like sort of opted for retirement, like at the end of the year. Like I think they're sort of going in a different direction there. But like Gernick on... Monday, he announced it on Twitter that he was retiring. His first season covering the Dodgers was 1982. He's covered them for MLB.com since 2001. He was with the LA Herald Examiner when the Dodgers won in 88. He's like one of my favorite people in baseball. Like, Well, and it's not just like personal, because like when I started in 2009 covering games like very sparingly, I think I only covered like 10 games that year. I wasn't like full time on the beat till 2012, but like right away, like any like questions I had, look, I was a like a dumb blogger coming in, and like could have easily been shunned, or like who the hell is this guy in the booth, right? Like, or in the press box. And but like Ken Gernick, Dylan Hernandez, and Tony Jackson were like exceedingly kind, like would answer any questions I had. They were very like respectful and nice and outgoing, helping me like whenever I had, I was, pretty quiet, like, didn't like press the issue on a lot of things, but I did. We clashed a lot of times, especially like even with Gernick, like on ideas and stuff. But man, like the guy knows what he's talking about, and he always came at it with like a fresh, like a good perspective, right? Even if we disagreed, we never like fought or anything like that. But like, no, he was great. And I think of all the people like who have covered the Dodgers since like I have been around, nobody truly like covered the team. Like he like blanketed the whole team with his coverage. Like a lot of guys, I would say, ignore. Like, look, and rightfully so, like they'll go after the, the big names because that gets clicks and eyeballs, and that's news. But like Ken will tell you like everything you need to know about like the ninth reliever on the team. In spring training, he'll like get to like every single player, like even a bunch of non-roster people, and like tell their story. And like he was the best at like if someone during the season, like, if a starter like missed a bullpen or was like should have pitched a bullpen and didn't, Ken would know about it. If he was just on top of like the most like minutia of all the details, and like he would always he was very insightful, and he would just know a lot. Like, he almost knew like the pitching schedule before like the manager did in some cases, it seemed like. But he saw like everything too. What was it? I think he told me, like, so I believe this was 1978, so I don't think he was on the Dodger beat yet, but he was just around and covering games and stuff. But he was in the room for when someone asked Tommy Lasorda what he thought of Dave Kingman's performance after Dave Kingman hit three home runs, and he was there for
What
that
did he
rant.
think?
It was one of the great rants of all time. At some point, like in the 1980s, like Pedro Guerrero threatened to fight Gernick because of a story he had written. And the thing is, like, eventually, like, they made up because it's impossible to like truly hate Gernick. He's like a really nice guy. Like, he's, it might be like a tough nut to crack. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but like he's still like he's like wickedly funny in like a very dry way. I don't know. I'm a huge fan. I would always ask him about like old games he covered and stuff. And I really love the 22 inning game with the Astros in 1989. I kept score of it at my grandma's house. I on like regular paper that I made into a scorecard, and I didn't save that scorecard. But Gernick one day in 2018, he brought to the press box his old scorebook from that year because he was on the beat. And he still even had the pencil. Well, first of all, he kept scoring pencil. But so that was like really cool to be able to see that. But like just an amazing dude. And like you saw like a lot of the people who worked with him alongside him who were like his competitors on the beat, like almost every single person had like nice things to say about him. He's one of my favorite people I've ever met in baseball, and very sad to see him retire, but happy that he'll have more time to spend with his family. And he's a good dude. So congrats to Ken Gernick on a wonderful career.
I think there's a writer on this story.
That's right. So 1982, Ken Gernick's first year on the Dodger beat. My question to you is, well, first of all, the 1982 Dodgers, they narrowly missed out on the playoffs. They lost the final day of the season on a Joe Morgan home run in San Francisco. The Braves ended up winning the division. But that pennant year was wild. Like, there was a time, so near the end of July, the Dodgers trailed the Braves by 10 games.
Whoa.
And then in less than 2 weeks, they were leading the division because the Dodgers went 12-1, including 7 head-to-head wins over the Braves. eight head-to-head wins. And 3 of them were at home. They had 3 walk-offs in a row against the Braves, and in extra innings. So, just a wild stretch, absolutely wild. So the 1982 Dodgers, it's the year after they won in 81. So we're going by Baseball Reference WAR. How many of the top 5 in Baseball Reference WAR from 1982 can you name?
So I yelled at you before we started recording about this because before I was born, Dodger history to me is sort of, it's not years. You know the years they won the World Series, but it's eras. And what I know of the 81 team and in the early 80s is this sort of transition from the infield team to the 88 team. Mm-hmm. And so 82 is this really mean season where I am unaware of when the members of the infield, for instance, started to move on from the Dodgers. So I'm a little upset at you, but I'm still going to give this a stab.
I'll tell you the hint that I gave you off air. It was that Davey Lopes was the only member of the infield to leave right after the 81 season.
which was the name I looked up to yell at you. And I'm like, yeah. See, I have proof. I'm going to start not in the infield. I'm going to start with Fernando.
Yeah, so my other hint was going to be that there are, you should have just thought of this as the 80s. And there are 2 1980s Dodgers there's probably more than that, but there's 2 that should come to mind immediately. And yes, Fernando was in there. He's actually number 2, 5.4 WAR this year. This was his second year. Mm-hmm. He was excellent. He won 19 games, 287 ERA, 122 ERA plus, but most importantly, 285 innings. Just crazy. Very, very good year.
Steve Garvey was my next.
Now, Garvey, this was Garvey's last year as a Dodger. He left as a free agent. He was 11th on the team in WAR. but now he hit 282, had nominally good numbers, drove in 86, 35 doubles, 16 home runs. You know, fans were rightfully mad that he left because he had a 101 OPS plus. You could kind of see why, Dodgers didn't know what his OPS plus was because OPS plus doesn't exist. But you could see, the Dodgers were all right, he's good, but also they probably, they probably could have kept him a little bit. But, so he was 11th. Fernando was the top pitcher, I will tell you that.
Okay. Ronce.
Ronce was 5th.
Can you guess what my next strategy is going to be?
3.6 WAR. That was also his last year with the Dodgers. 24 home runs. He was 2nd on the team with 24 home runs.
Russell.
He's going down the infield. Now, Bill Russell, amazingly almost, was 3rd.
Okay.
4.9 WAR. I think he's getting a lot more for his defense. Now, he did have a 99 OPS plus, which is pretty good for him. I'm going to look up in a separate window. That might be his best year of WAR. I'm going to tell you in a few seconds while you think of another guess.
But no, I'm tapping out after this. And I just want to point out, and I wanted to look this up. I wasn't going to guess. I'm at least aware enough to not have guessed this, but I want to point out.
Yeah.
that Davey Lopes last year was 81. Hershiser's first year was 83. And to me, those the infield and then sort of the Hershiser era are the dividing line, and Fernando's kind of the connecting piece. And that's what I know. So you picked this one year that I had to kind of like bridge the gap on names that I probably know. But
I didn't pick it. Ken Gernick.
It's still Ken's fault.
So
I got three? Is that right?
Yeah. So Bill Russell's next best year was 3.0 twice. So this was by far his best year by WAR. He had 31 WAR in his career. Not bad, but like not great. Okay, so the other clear 80s choice that I was thinking of was Pedro Guerrero. This was the first of his two 30-100 years.
Mm-hmm.
6.8 WAR. Just an excellent hitter. 156 OPS plus. He hit 304, 32 homers, 22 steals, 100 RBIs on the nose.
Yeah, I'm looking up now. I definitely thought Pedro Guerrero started a little bit later than he did.
Yep. So Jerry Royce, 4.2 WAR, was fourth. I was actually surprised that was his. But he was excellent. Like, he was really good. 254 innings. My God. So those you got three of the five, though. That's really good. Ken Landreau, I would not have guessed, sixth. Steve Sachs, Rookie of the Year, was seventh. Bob Welch was eighth, 3.0 WAR. So, like, they had eight guys with three WAR. So that's, like, really good. And then, so there's your fun Dodgers trivia today. You did really well.
I just was bad. I'm like, no, I can do 81. I could do mid-80s maybe. 82 would be a little tough. But, yeah, I'm proud of that. But you know what? Revenge is sweet, and our friend Craig is going to help me, because it's time for
Questions from Craig. We love them.
time where I get to ask you about current baseball players, something I'm a little bit more equipped. I feel more confident answering them, which means it would be more embarrassing when I get them all wrong. Are you ready? For the first one is a trivia question. So Mike Trout is one of four current players with 300 or more home runs and zero sacrifice hits. Can Eric name the other three sluggers who never bunted a fellow player over? And then a bonus question. There are four Hall of Famers with 400 or more home runs with no sacrifice bunts. Can you name those four players?
Okay, so the current ones, I will guess...
So current players, 300 more home runs, no sacrifice hits.
Nelson Cruz, Edwin Encarnacion.
Edwin Encarnacion is number one with 424 home runs, no sacrifice hits.
Wow.
Nelson Cruz is not on the list.
I didn't realize he had 424 home runs. Oh, man. 300 home runs and no sacrifices.
Nelson Cruz has two sacrifice hits.
What a jerk. wow. I don't know why I'm blanking on like players who should have 300 home runs. I was going to say Pujols has to have a sacrifice, I think, but I know that because you said...
One of these names I think would be surprising, but I think the other is like the epitome of home run hitter.
Oh, Stanton?
There you go. Stanton with 312 home runs, no sacrifice hits.
Mm-hmm. Can
you Carl Stanton bunting? Just him and Aaron Judge, right? Like,
I would think Stanton bunting would be like... It would still be like a 97 mile an hour.
Yeah. the last name, I'm just going to give it to you because I think, not shocking, but not the name I think that would come to mind. Ryan Braun.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, the home run. Yes, home run. Wow.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame. I'm like, why are you looking at me weird? It's because I didn't say what I thought I said. Hall of Fame players with 400 more home runs and no sacrifice hits.
So, this is weird. I guess
this is a great question, because some of these names, like when you hear them, you'll think, "Oh, yeah, of course."
What about Jim Tomei?
Oh man, is that a great? No, not. I gotta look this up.
Yeah,
because you're right. That is the epitome of no way. Jim Tomei had one sacrifice in '94.
Rafael Palmeiro.
Nope.
Oh, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Yeah. There is one former Dodger on here.
I'm gonna guess Eddie Murray.
Nope.
But although I'm sure he had a sacrifice because Eddie Murray played the game the right way. So it doesn't have to be that. Okay.
Another hint. Said Dodger is not in the Hall of Fame as a Dodger.
Right. Well, he couldn't be because no Dodger has 400 home runs.
Yeah.
So, or with the Dodgers. So, this is another one like Frank Robinson, Hank Aaron, like they all like.
One last hit, because I think this will help. Three of these players played in the 90s and aughts.
Huh. Okay. Jeff Bagwell?
Nope.
Frank Thomas?
There you go. There's one.
Both born on the same day. Mike Piazza?
Mike Piazza.
Nice.
Another guy that I just cannot squaring up.
You're right. That doesn't. I can't even picture it. Like what?
So I'm just gonna give you Harmon Killebrew.
Yeah. That's good.
But
the logo. Yeah.
I'll give you the biggest hint. And this is, I think, my favorite name of a player I'm trying to imagine, and not just swinging. Is an Angel.
Oh, Reggie. An Angel. It's not Pujols.
Somehow not in the Hall of Fame, Albert Pujols. Can't imagine why.
Oh yeah. Vladimir.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah, classic.
You want me the
that would be that'd be one of those things where like Vladimir Guerrero like would have been the guy who had like a. It was going to be a sacrifice, but he somehow beat it out,
and
the pitch bounced. Like,
all right, yeah. This is speaking to revenge the other way around. Here's a debate question. We did this last episode. I had to argue that the Mets would make the playoffs. You had to argue that the Angels would. We thought I got the better end of that deal. You win this one. Eric, take the Cardinals, and Jacob, take the Cubs, and tell me why your team will win the NL Central Division in 2021. And maybe this is certainly a recency bias on why it's easy to think the Cubs aren't going to make it, but if it's just the Darvish deal, the Central is bad enough. The Cardinals, the Cubs coming off a really good shortened season, they still have a great core. If that's all they're losing, Zach Davies is still a fine pitcher. They can totally do this in kind of a weak division.
It's still very much a toss-up. So, like, either way, like, we're...
So, I think the reason why I don't like this is I don't think it's just Darvish. I think...
Right. Well, also, the Pirates are terrible. So, like, they're obviously not going to win. Now, if you look... I talked about the Fangraphs projected war.
Yep.
On that list, the Brewers are actually the top.
But yeah, I was hoping he would give me the Brewers.
but like then it's like the Cardinals and Cubs are like dead heat.
Is that after
and
the
then,
trade?
Yes.
Okay.
That includes no Darvish. Now I'm looking at I think this Mike Petriello wrote this the other day, and I'm not sure if he included Davies in the Cubs rotation. So the Cubs might actually be a little bit better than the Cardinals. Now, I will say this. The Cardinals, also the Reds, like, they traded Raisel Iglesias. They're going to lose Trevor Bauer. They're rumored to, like, shop, like, Castillo and Sonny Gray. So, like, they're looking to, like, cut right now, too. So it's an issue. Like, So the argument is that like they're in the Central. That's how they win. Then the Cardinals, like they declined the option on Colton Wong, which is a very reasonable option, one of the best defenders in the game and like is still a good hitter. They like Wainwright, Molina, like still free agents. Now they're older obviously, but there's a lot of question marks. I don't know about the Cardinals. Like, I know I have to like vouch for them, but the argument is that the NL Central is wide open, and any team that does anything to try to win is probably going to have the go ahead. Like, you looked at the Reds last year, like they made moves to like, you know, try to contend, and they made the expanded playoffs. Like, they were decent enough to do that. Like, their pitching was really good.
I think I'm going to help you out, I guess, in that the thing the Cardinals have going for it is they may be able, like, they haven't kind of put their flag in the sand on how aggressive or not they'll be, whereas the Cubs have kind of picked the wrong one. And so all it takes is the Cardinals doing just a little bit. Re-sign Molina and Wainwright, get another kind of impact player, and all of a sudden they should be firmly the favorite, I would think. Certainly against the Cubs, maybe not against the Brewers. And if the Cubs keep shedding current assets, it's just going to get more pronounced.
Yeah, that's true. Man, it's what a bad division that's going to be.
All right. Well, the 16-team playoff system may not come back. Do you two believe there will be a few more wild card teams in 2021?
I think there is, like, I think eventually, who knows how the status of these talks are, but like I think eventually like the union and the owners will figure it out, like, and they'll get like a DH in for 2021, and they'll get some sort of expanded playoffs, because expanded playoffs are coming in the new CBA. Now, it might not be the 16 team, but like it could be, and like maybe for the short term it is, and then just stick with that thing they had this year with 8 series, you know, in the first round, as opposed to like one of the things being talked about was like number one seed gets a bye, and then the other six teams in each league like fight it off, and you get to pick your opponent or something like that. I don't know.
But I think like, another thing we discussed is do you auto give the higher seeds wins so they only have to win, which is something the KBO does.
Yeah. And then this year, remember, like all the host teams played all 3 games at their park if it lasted that long.
Right. So that still doesn't like feel like enough of an advantage for 162 knock on wood season.
That said, this year, you would assume by October, like there'll be fans in the stands, you know, probably. So like it'll be a little bit better of an advantage rather than just having batting last, you know? So like maybe it is more of an advantage, but I think for sure there'll be expanded playoffs in 2021, and maybe for the short term, they just stick with last year's plan and then figure out the longer term once they do the new CBA after the season.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think during the actual discussions, like, they could come up with some interesting plans. I mentioned the KBO, I think, is a good league to kind of look at maybe and think of, like, get a little weird. Like, allow for more excitement to be... There's ways to make it so that there's more teams actually fighting for something. But at the same time, rewarding teams over a long season that they felt like the regular season was worth it. So,
yeah.
And I think we saw that with the wild card format that expanded with the wild card game, where that was, you added a team and you made the playoffs, I thought, so much more fun. And still an extreme advantage to win a division over the wild card.
Yeah.
All right. Is winning 200 or more games the new career benchmark for starting pitchers? I think now, I just don't think there is a benchmark for wins anymore. Like,
yeah, that's where I was going with this too. Like, because I first read this as like, is 200 the new 300?
And that's like, how I read it as well.
Yeah, and so, and I don't think there's any that like automatic, like, well, this guy's a Hall of Famer. He has, you know, 300 wins or whatever. I don't think we're there. I think it's like you wins are a thing, but they're not the thing anymore like they used to be. But having said this, man, like I was looking at the active win leaderboard. It is depressing. Like, so when CC Sabathia was pitching, like he started so young and like was like great pretty much right away. And I always thought like he would, it was like for a while, like him and Kershaw, like, because everyone who gets 300, like, well, is this going to be the last guy to get 300 wins? Like, I thought CC had a chance, but then like later he obviously had injuries and he dealt with like alcoholism and other stuff. And he retired with 251. Now Kershaw is, he's going to be 33. He has 175. Like, that's a long way to go to 300, right? Like, but he's like by far like the youngest guy in this area. Like, okay, first of all, I was surprised by this. Rick Porcello has 150. I would not have thought that at all. Like, he just finished his age 31 season. But like, okay, so Madison Bumgarner finishes age 30 season. He's at 120. But just looking at this list, so of all the people who in 2020 were in their 20s, Gerrit Cole has the highest number of wins. He just finished his age 29 season. He has 101 wins. So like even 200 is a chore, man. Like, I mean, so it kind of is right now. Like, I'm just going down this list. Person in their 20s from 2020, Julio Teheran with 77 wins, Trevor Bauer with 75, both just finished their age 29 season. That's terrible for like long term. Like they could, you know, Teheran was bad. Like he's like out of the league in a few years. Bad. Like so, but like, you know, Bauer obviously could do better, but like that's a long way to go. Like Bartolo Colon still sort of nominally active, 247. Verlander's at 226. Greinke is 208. John Lester said he wants to re-sign with the Cubs. He's at 193. He wants to get his 200th win with the Cubs. And then it's Kershaw and Scherzer at 175. Oh, man. Felix Hernandez at 169. It's like, is he going to get 31 more wins? Like, we talked about Adam Wainwright, too. He's at 167, but he's just finished his age 38 season. So 200 is a tough ask, man. Like this is, David Price is at 150 and he's about to be 35. So like, man, 200 is a benchmark. So it kind of is like, it was one of those things. Like, I guess I didn't think about it as much like that, but Steven Strasburg is at 112, but he's going to be 32. Yeah, this is harsh. I did not expect it to be this dark when I looked this up.
Final question. My side vegetable rotation has been spinach, green beans, cauliflower, and broccoli for the most part. Which vegetables have you two cooked the most during 2020? And are there some that you want to try more of in 2021?
No, I'm just kidding. So the ones I cook the most are mushrooms, for sure. And I mostly because I have them with breakfast a lot. I have spinach mostly with breakfast.
Are mushrooms vegetables?
I'm pretty sure. I was about to ask if tomatoes were vegetables, but they're fruit, aren't they?
So this is the thing where it's like, no, they're actually fruit. But then I see like botanists get into arguments that they're like technically both, I guess.
Yeah.
I
don't know. Okay, so.
Although mushrooms are classified as vegetables, technically they are not plants, but part of the kingdom of fungi.
But
so a similar situation, probably.
I think tomatoes are vegetables too. Like,
right.
And so I would say mushrooms and tomatoes. For me, I put those, like those are in my omelets the most often, but also I use them in other stuff too. But spinach, mostly breakfast, but is right there. I've cooked green beans and cauliflower more this year than usual. I want to do more corn in 2020 and you like ears of corn, not necessarily the cream corn or off the ear. I like the ears of corn. I'm gonna do more of that. Other stuff, maybe asparagus. I don't eat that enough. Yeah, I don't know.
We during our year 2020, we've been using a sort of a local farmers market delivery service that got set up here in Lawrence, where it's a sort of a co-op of a bunch of farmers, and they coordinate to have an online website and deliver food to you. And that's been really great. So we've had to kind of be more seasonal. Side salads, whether that's spring or spinach, definitely what I make the most. On top of onions, 5 pounds of onions is the regular addition. It goes in basically everything we eat. Squash, the variety of different squashes have been the most seasonal sort of winter vegetable that we've been having a ton of. Melissa's made a bunch of that. So in terms of next year, just kind of keeping that seasonal thing up. Radishes, I've been a big fan of radishes lately, so I'll probably try and do more with that, whether that's watermelon or daikons or whatever. So
yeah, I use onion a lot, especially in cooking. And like they're just like prevalent a lot. And so I'm there as well. I haven't joined it yet, but like I'm close to joining another one of those same type of deal, like a sort of a produce delivery type service. I've looked into meal prep stuff on that, but I don't know. I do okay just by going to the store. And
yeah.
That's me just trying to plan out stuff. That part I'm better at, but like I was looking at getting like a more of a variety of the produce that so I'm that's why I think I would join one of these things. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But squash is also good. I'm gonna throw that into my 2021 pile as well.
All right, so
that's it.
That's it.
We did. So this is our 37th episode of 2020. I think had the year been a normal year, like a full season, we would have done many more.
Just during that sort of down period, there was just nothing to talk about other than, man, this is depressing, isn't it?
Yeah. So maybe 2021, that's our goal. We'll do somewhere in the 40s of episodes next year, maybe even more. I don't know if you heard this, Jacob, but 2020, the Dodgers won the World Series.
So. Whoa. That's pretty good.
That's kind of weird.
I thought it was the Padres.
Yeah.
My understanding is...
they won the offseason in 2020. So, there it is. So Dodgers won the World Series. Padres won the offseason.
Now, the Mookie Betts trade was in 2020. And you could argue...
Maybe. So the Dodgers won one offseason. But I think, I can't remember. Was it the Reds who won the offseason last year? I don't remember. That's the thing. Like nobody ever remembers who wins the offseason. within like a few months. Like so, it's always weird. But anyway, enough about that. We'll see you next in 2021. And thanks for listening, everybody. Happy New Year.